Hi, everybody. This is Gary Sandy, and thank you very much for listening to the WKRP cast.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say...
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
Are you awake? Whoa! Are you awake now?
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Say what?
Dear God, she's going to kill us all.
Welcome to the WKRP cast. My name is Donna Stair.
And I'm her husband, Alan. This is a week-by-week, episode-by-episode rewatch. We're getting into the music,
the trivia,
and the fun of WKRP.
So, fellow babies, don't touch that dial. It's time for the WKRP cast.
I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.
Welcome back to another WKRP cast. We're going to appreciate some art today. Donna, what is our episode?
We're ready to discuss The Painting. The air date was the 10th of January, 1981. Written by Stephen Campman, story editor Lisa Levin. Executive story consultants Steve Marshall and Dan Gunselman. And it was directed by Rod Daniel. Bailey and Herb attended an auction at Mr. Carlson's church. Bailey fell in love with a painting and Herb bought it. Herb tries to resell the painting to Bailey, but she can't afford it. But then Herb learns that it might be valuable and he thinks he's going to become rich.
Well, welcome back to the Season of Herb. Season 3 has a number of very Herb-centric episodes. For an ensemble comedy, things are maybe not as balanced as they should be in Season 3. Episodes like this one, Real Families, Hotel Ocean View, and even A Mile in My Shoes tend to be either focused on or driven by Herbert R. Tarlick. The upcoming Frog Story and Out to Lunch will also be very Herb-heavy. Now, we aren't complaining. We love Frank Bonner, and the hilarious mix of lovable sleaze he brings to the character of Herb is always a fun watch.
There's an old saying among comedians, math jokes don't work. This Stephen Campman written episode relies heavily on Herb's constant selling and reselling of the painting. His ongoing attempts at making a profit from his $100 investment are funny, but unless you follow along with a pad and paper, some of the finer points of his negotiations get lost. Campman has created a tight little narrative where all the dollars seem to add up in the end, but the old saying is right. Solving the equation doesn't necessarily lead to big laughs.
Just for the math professors in the audience, they'll get a big laugh out of it.
So. All right.
Let's get into this episode. We start out in the bullpen. Bailey enters from the main hallway just as Les comes in from the door that leads out to the studio. Bailey asks Les where he was on Sunday.
Why?
Sunday was Mr. Carlson's church auction. Les tells her he knew that.
It's really embarrassing. Les, Herb, and I were the only employees who showed up.
Les tells Bailey he was called away suddenly to Dayton.
Oh, come on, Les. Nobody's ever suddenly called away to Dayton.
Les tells Bailey he was visiting his mother.
Oh, well, that's nice. How is she?
Even smaller, I'm afraid.
And now a special look at this episode's bandage placement for the 5-time Buckeye NewsHawk Award winner, Les Nessman. This is the Les Nessman Bandage Report. Now, here's Donna Stair with her report about Les Nessman.
Entire left wrist.
This has been a look at the bandage placement for Silver Sow and Copper Cob award-winning journalist, Les Nessman.
Les tells Bailey that he and his mother had lunch together.
You know, it's very disconcerting to have those two little eyes peering up at you from table level.
Bailey tells Les that he didn't miss much. Les says that he went last year and they just auctioned off a lot of junk.
They had one nice thing this year. It was this really amazing painting of a sunlit summer lawn filled with geraniums and wicker furniture. And in the background, two women strolling in the gentle summer breeze. Oh, I loved it.
Les asks Bailey if she bought it. Bailey tells Les she couldn't afford it, and she chickened out.
Herb enters just as Bailey says this.
Well, I didn't.
He's carrying a painting in a gold ornate frame. Bailey's excited when she sees the painting.
Les, this is it. This is the painting.
Herb looks at Les and asks him where he was.
We had a date, Lester. We were going to the auction to suck up some brownie points with the big guy by buying something together.
50-50? I waited and waited for you until there was nothing left but this painting. I had to buy it.
Herb is not happy. Les tells Herb he was visiting his mother.
How is Shorty?
And
it's time!
Herb Darlick, fashion alert.
Now, we've seen this jacket before, but it seemed to really pop in this episode because it was paired with the pants. The jacket is brown and tan plaid with fawn-colored pocket flaps, elbow patches, and collar. There are fawn-colored highlights around the buttonholes of the jacket, too. The pants are the exact fawn color as the elbow patches, pocket flaps, and coat collar. Herb has his white belt, and he is wearing two-toned brown and white shoes.
I have a theory. I haven't gone back and looked, but I think they add more of those weird fawn-colored pieces to this jacket every time he wears it. It seems like there's more on it each time. Celeste stands up from his chair.
Watch it, Tarlick.
Herb tells him he will watch it when he gets his 50 bucks.
That's half of what I paid for this oil slick. Now give me the money.
Oil slick. Les tells Herb to forget it. Bailey stands up to defend Les, telling Herb to leave him alone. Bailey tells Herb he was supposed to go to the auction because it was a worthy cause.
Don't be naive, Bailey.
Herb won't even give money to Jerry Lewis's kids.
Les mentions Jerry Lewis's kids. Now, Jerry Lewis was an American comedian, filmmaker, actor, humanitarian, and singer.
Okay.
Born Joseph Levitch in 1926, he earned the nickname the King of Comedy and was widely known for his kid and idiot personas. Lewis hosted an annual telethon each Labor Day weekend for the Muscular Dystrophy Association from 1966 through 2010.
Live from Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, it's the 1985 Jerry Lewis Super Show to benefit the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Children with muscular dystrophy appeared on the telethon with Jerry. These children became known as Jerry's Kids.
During his tenure as telethon host and national MDA chairman, Lewis helped raise more than $2.6 billion for MDA programs and research. Over 200 research and treatment facilities were built with donations raised by the Jerry Lewis telethons. Lewis hosted about 21 hours of the annual telethon each year until health issues forced him to back that down. In later years, he would host at the beginning and the end with taped and guest host segments appearing overnight.
Now, although Lewis raised billions for MDA, his approach drew fire from activists. They claimed the wheelchair-bound kids who appeared on the show were nothing more than window dressing to Lewis. He was accused of treating the children poorly off camera. Lewis received a Nobel Peace Prize nomination in 1977, a Governor's Award in 2005, and the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award in 2009 in recognition of his efforts with the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Lewis hosted his last telethon on Labor Day of 2010. In August of 2011, he was, in effect, fired by the MDA. Lewis died in 2017 at the age of 91.
Herb walks over to Les, taking the painting with him.
I've told you 1,000 times they're not Jerry's kids, they're everybody's kids.
Well, that's not what Jerry says.
Herb asks Les if he's going to give him the money. Les tells him no. Herb tells Les he is just going to have to punch him out.
You do, and I'll see you in court.
You would do that, wouldn't you?
Man, resulting to physical violence. Smiling, Les responds. Les seems gleeful about this, too. Herb walks over and hands the painting to Bailey.
Hold this. As a matter of fact, you can have it.
Bailey is thrilled.
Thank you.
Herb walks over to Les's desk and leans down to get closer to him.
All right, Lester. I'm going to go sit at my desk, and I'm going to stare at you for as long as it takes.
He walks back over to his desk as he continues.
The guilt will be more than you can take. Soon, Les, it'll begin to gnaw at your insides.
Les is at his desk writing, not even looking at Herb, and acting as if he's not even listening.
So Herb sits at his desk, but he has his back to Les. He props his feet up on his desk.
Soon, Les, you'll feel a sense of fairness which will compel you to do the right thing. And soon, Les, you'll beg me to release you from your guilt and sin.
And here's where Herb makes his move. He puts his feet down and he quickly spins his chair around so he is facing Les. Les has gone on the defensive. He's crouched down so you only see his eyes as he peers over the top edge of his desk at Herb. Herb begins hyperventilating, grabbing at his chest. And this is the eye thing that Les was talking about with Mama. It freaked him out.
He's learned that from Mama.
And Les's beady eyes take us into our theme.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
We come back to Mr. Carlson's office. Mr. Carlson is sitting at his desk, and we see him pick up a small model Scottish bagpiper.
Oh, I dearly love the sound of a bagpipe.
Mr. Carlson begins making the noise of a bagpipe with his mouth, patting his throat to get the vibrato sound.
Bagpipes are a reeded woodwind instrument. Their origin dates back to the 13th century, but they could be even older. Some historians claim the ancient Greeks may have invented bagpipes, and it's possible the Emperor Nero was a bagpipe player. Although the Scots are quite famous for their great Highland pipes, bagpipes have been played throughout large parts of Europe, Northern Africa, Western and Southern Asia, and even around the Persian Gulf.
Jennifer enters his office. Carlson says good morning to her and asks how her weekend was.
Okay. It's just so unfortunate I had to be in Spain on Sunday and miss the auction.
Carlson thanks her for the many appliances she donated.
What is her life? In Spain on Sunday and donating all the washers,
you know,
and dryers.
What her life is. Her life is her looks.
Why does she keep showing up there for work, though? I don't get that.
Picking up his little Scottish bagpiper, Carlson proudly shows it off to Jennifer.
I bought these little fellows at the auction. You know, this kind of craftsmanship is almost a lost art, Jennifer. So rare to find nowadays.
Jennifer tells Art it's not immature for a grown man to have toy soldiers.
This is a real hobby. Nothing to be ashamed of.
She's trying to justify it. He doesn't care. Jennifer asks if she can see them. Art is only too happy to let her inspect one of his soldiers.
No, I caught little Arthur trying to shoot their heads off this morning.
Little Arthur is a scary little dude.
He is.
Carlson goes on to explain little Arthur was using an automatic pump gun that he hadn't seen before.
Sometimes that boy frightens me, Jennifer.
I'm sure he's just going through a stage, much like Germany did.
Mr. Carlson opens up about his fear to Jennifer.
Sometimes I fear he's connected to some darker force that could shake the world.
Jennifer quickly puts the model soldier back onto Carlson's desk.
Well, maybe not.
And she starts out of the office.
Herb enters the office, knocking as he walks in. He tells Art he has two questions.
One, why is Jerry Lewis so popular in France? Ha! Just kidding. And two, how much did the auction take in?
Art tells Herb they took in over $10,000.
So why is Jerry Lewis so popular in France? It's a real thing. He's always been beloved by the French. They've even dubbed him Le Roi du Crazy, or the King of Crazy. U.S. press and critics never embraced Lewis as a true artist. Although his movies did well financially, he was always considered a schlocky comic here at home. In France, he was revered as a great artist and auteur going back to the 1960s. He even won a French Critics Award for his film, The Nutty Professor. Really?
Yeah.
These days, to be the Jerry Lewis of something means you're loved in France, but they don't respect you at home.
So Herb turns to Jennifer.
I bought a very expensive painting.
Jennifer looks at him, kind of shocked.
You bought a painting?
That's right, Jenny Poo.
And do I see a bullfighter emblazoned across a field of black velvet?
Biting his lower lip, Herb tells her.
Unfortunately, no. Just one of those oil things, but what the heck? It's for a good cause.
So he's kind of disappointed that it's not.
He was wanting a bullfighter, yeah.
Jennifer tells Herb she didn't know he was interested in art.
There are a lot of things you don't know about me, baby.
I know, and thank you.
Jennifer leaves the office. Herb closes the door behind her, and he turns back to Mr. Carlson.
So Art asks Herb if there is something he can do for him. Herb is hanging around, obviously. He tells Art he just wanted to say how much he enjoyed the auction.
And I'm sure the staff who didn't show up had perfectly good excuses.
Herb walks over to stand beside Art. He puts his arm on the back of his chair.
Except Les, of course, who did a no-show, or as Les just said to me this morning, hey, that's Baldy's auction. I've got better things to do with my Sundays.
Dan throws Les under the bus. Art turns to look at Herb, who's nodding his head up and down.
Mr. Carlson tells Herb he appreciates his support. Herb grabs Mr. Carlson on his shoulders, giving a little squeeze. Herb walks behind Mr. Carlson.
I'm just glad I was able to open up my heart, my pocketbook, to buy a painting, which, in all honesty, I don't like that much. Poor church I'm not really a member of, to help find a cure for a disease that, quite frankly, doesn't affect that many people. Well, thank you, and I mean it.
Mr. Carlson thanks Herb again, and then asks,
Herb, exactly what is it that you want?
Would you be interested in buying that painting back?
No.
Herb begins walking toward the door.
Perfect. Perfect. I understand. So what if I don't have the money to take the family to Milwaukee?
Carlson says what?
Herb tells him for months, Lucille has been planning a family trip to Milwaukee. They want to tour the different breweries there. He starts telling Art about Lucille's brother, who's an assistant brewmaster.
Herb seems to be creating this story on the spot.
Yeah, I've never told you this, have I?
Herb, look, will you get out of my office if I buy your painting?
Herb says yes, he will get out of his office if he buys the painting. So Art asks Herb what he wants for the painting. Herb tells him whatever he feels in his heart is right.
How about $10?
Oh, gosh.
Whoops.
Except that.
Yeah, Herb rolls his eyes.
Probably need a little more than that. You see, I paid $150 for that painting.
Now, Milwaukee has a long tradition as a major brewer in the United States. The first brewery in Milwaukee opened in 1840. Milwaukee has been home to more than 70 breweries in its history. At its peak, Milwaukee boasted the highest volume of beer produced annually of any city in the world. It's a title they held until 1981.
These days, Milwaukee has about 30 breweries. Most of them are microbreweries. When it comes to the city with the highest total number of breweries in the U.S., you'll have to go just south of Milwaukee. Chicago has more than 160 breweries in the city and suburbs. Oh, and if Lucille's planning this trip by car, it takes about 6 hours to drive from Cincinnati to Milwaukee. Just stay on I-65 north.
Now, Herb says that he paid $150 for the painting, but then he thinks a bit.
Were you there when that painting was auctioned off? Yes, I believe you were. And come to think of it, I got that painting for $100. What am I thinking about?
Carlson has had enough.
I'll give you $50 if you get out of my office right now, $20 if you're still here 20 seconds from now, and $10 if we're face-to-face a minute from now.
Smiling, Herb stands up and heads to the door.
I'll be right back before you can say thanks, Herb Charlie, for helping my church.
So we hard cut into the bullpen with Herb face-to-face with Bailey. Bailey is holding the painting, and Herb is yelling at Bailey.
What do you mean it's your painting?
Bailey tells him he gave it to her, so it's hers.
When?
10 minutes ago.
Where?
Right here. You said here. You can have it.
Yeah, and we heard him give it to
her. Yeah.
Herb is having to think quickly here.
Bailey. You can have it is just a figure of speech.
Herb tells Bailey people say it all the time. It doesn't mean anything.
It's like, thanks a million or so's your mother.
Bailey looks at Herb with little slit eyes. She moves so her body is between Herb and the painting.
It's my painting, Herb. Thanks a million.
And now, here's Herb doing what Herb is best at.
You come in here every morning in your freshly pressed outfits and your freshly scrubbed face, and you sit here all day, hardly speaking above a whisper, and then, when a man is vulnerable, shaken, upset, you just reach out and rip from him what is rightfully and fairly his. Oh, Bailey, I'm just so disappointed.
Herb, so is your mother.
Bailey takes the painting and leaves the bullpen.
I love how she turned back So's Your Mother on him and thanks a million. We transition to Andy's office, where Andy's sitting behind his desk and Venus and Johnny are on the couch. Johnny is reading a Billboard magazine. Bailey enters with her painting and proudly shows it to them. We hear Breezin' by George Benson playing over the monitor speaker.
Hey, you know where we are? It's the programming office. We spent a lot of time here during season one, back before we had the bullpen. These days, we hardly ever make it to Andy's office. We have a poster watch.
Want to skip the poster watch? Fast forward 5 minutes and 30 seconds from Mark.
We start out in the hallway. We've got through the door of the programming office. We see a poster promoting guitarist Steve Hackett's Defector Tour. Hackett had been the guitarist for prog rock band Genesis from 1971 until 77 before he headed out on his own. Although Defector was his fourth studio album, this was his first tour in the States. Yes, I'm such a simple man. Defector would go to number 9 on the UK album charts, but it only peaked at number 144 in the US.
To the right of Hackett's poster is a promo for the Ultravox album Vienna. Ultravox, like Hackett, was a British artist trying to break through in the States. Ultravox was a new wave synth pop band. This was their fourth studio album, but their first on Chrysalis Records. The title cut, Vienna, had just been released in January of 1981. The single marked the band's worldwide commercial breakthrough and led to solid sales throughout 1981. Even though the album would hit number 3 and be certified platinum in the UK, Vienna will only make it to number 164 on the US album chart.
If you look behind Andy's desk, the woman doing the ballerina pose on that poster is Pat Benatar. This is a promo poster for her hugely successful 1980 album, Crimes of Passion. This was her second studio album and her biggest ever, with 4 million copies sold. It was sitting at number 2 on the U.S. album charts in January of 1981 as this episode was airing. It most likely would have made it to number 1, but John Lennon and Yoko Ono's Double Fantasy had taken the top spot shortly after Lennon's shooting in December. Double Fantasy would remain at number 1 for 8 weeks. Crimes contained the single Hit Me With Your Best Shot, which is considered Benatar's biggest and best known song. Hit me with your best shot. Why don't you hit me with your best shot? Hit me with your best shot. Fire away. Over the file cabinets is a giant cowboy hat with the words Charlie Daniels Band across it. This is a promotion for Daniels' 1979 album, Million Mile Reflections. Reflections contained the smash crossover hit, Devil Went Down to Georgia. The single had originally been released in May of 1979 and was a huge country hit. It experienced a surge on rock stations in 1980 thanks to its inclusion on the Urban Cowboy soundtrack. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, 'cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul. Devil Went Down to Georgia hit number 1 on the U.S. Billboard country charts and peaked at number 3 on the U.S. Hot 100. To the left of Charlie's hat is a guy in a vest with a guitar leaning up against his leg. That would be Eric Clapton, and it's a promo for his Just One Night live album. There is nothing that is wrong, wanting you to stay here. Got somewhere to go, but don't you make
make yourself at home and stay with me. Don't you ever leave. Lay it down, Sally. Rest you in my arms. Don't you think you want someone to talk?
Just One Night was a double-length album recorded at the Budokan Theater in Tokyo, Japan in December of 1979. Clapton was touring to promote his backless studio album. The two-disc live set peaked at number 2 on the U.S. charts. This poster is somewhat rare. Copies in good vintage condition are going for $350 or more.
The jazzy instrumental under this entire scene is guitarist George Benson and his single, Breezin'. The tune was written by Bobby Womack in 1970. Benson's recording was the title track for his 1976 studio album. The single was released in September of 1976. It would peak at number 63 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100.
I like George Benson, and I like Breezin', but I think it's way too much in this scene. It's really a lot.
It goes on and on, yeah. Yes. Now, where were we before this long poster watch? Oh, I know. Bailey had just come into Andy's office.
Good morning, boys. I'm here. I wanted you to see my new painting. Isn't it great? Don't you just love the shading and the color of the flowers?
Venus and Johnny look at Bailey with very unimpressed expressions.
Don't you just hate the shading and the color of the flowers?
Andy jumps up from his desk and tells Bailey not to pay any attention to those jerks. They don't know anything. Bailey asks Andy if he likes the painting.
I don't know. I sincerely like the frame.
And Andy doesn't know anything either. He just likes the frame.
Bailey turns to Venus and asks him what he thinks. Well, Venus gets up and, taking the painting from Bailey, goes over to Andy's bulletin board, rips a poster down, and puts the painting up in its place.
Venus stands back to look at the painting. He's posing in front of the painting. Then he moves back a bit more. This time he crosses his arms in front of his chest. He stands for a bit again. I think he's picturing himself being in a gallery. Then he moves back even more as he continues to intently look at the painting.
Now let's take a look at Venus's vibin' threads. Venus is wearing a suit of rich maroon-colored velour pants and jacket with white stitching outlining the lapel. He has a rainbow-colored pin on his jacket lapel that might be a vehicle of some kind. His dark shirt with red flowers is unbuttoned halfway down his chest, and we can see gold chains around his neck.
He is taking this painting very seriously. He backs up even more. And then a little more. He continues to pose until finally he is out in the hallway. He is no longer in view. Andy and Bailey are looking out in the hallway after him. Suddenly, Venus comes walking back into Andy's office.
That's nice. That's real nice.
Bailey tells Venus,
"Thank you."
And she looks at Johnny.
Well,
you know, when Venus kept backing up and backing up, and then he went into the hallway, I thought he was going to make an escape.
I did, too. I figured he was just going to be gone. They'd look out the
he
door, and he's
in.
Out of there. But no, he was just very seriously taking in that painting.
Well, Johnny appears to be engrossed with reading Billboard magazine. He looks up at the painting.
So, it's nice.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
Bailey tells Johnny that she is surprised at him.
I always thought you had a little taste, not as much as her, of course.
Which brings us to
the line of the episode.
Like meaning I have to be able to smell the psychic sweat of the artist coming off the canvas, you know?
Johnny then launches into his critique of the painting.
I want a sense that he shares my vision that we're all morally adrift in a chaotic world of distorted social values. I want to feel his loathing, his self-contempt, and all those dark urges. I want to sense from his work that he's come to grips with his own homosexuality, if not gone to jail for it. I want to know...
Oh, shut up.
What?
Shut up.
Okay.
And Johnny really could be an art critic. Just he could go on like that, just I'm sure, for 10 minutes. So Herb comes rushing into Andy's office. Seeing the painting, he heads over to take it down.
There it is.
Leave it alone, Herb.
Herb tells Bailey it's his. He flashes the receipt at all of them. Andy asks what's going on. Bailey explains Herb gave her the painting, and now he's trying to steal it back. Now Herb is holding the painting.
And I can't think of a thing that's going to stop me.
What about the four of us beating you to dust?
Looks at Venus.
You do, and I'll see you in court.
We don't care.
We don't care.
Herb turns and he puts the painting back on the wall where Venus had hung it earlier. Herb is having difficulty breathing as he walks up behind Bailey and asks if he can speak privately to her in the hallway.
Nope.
Herb leaves Andy's office.
Now, Herb, with this hyperventilating thing, we talked about it, and when you pointed it out, it is a well that they go back to a lot in this episode.
Yes, they do. And I don't remember Herb ever hyperventilating like that in other episodes. Nice. Or if he did, it was maybe once or
something. It's something, though, that they seem to have come up with for this one. And Frank Bonner makes it funny. It is funny when he does it.
But I think they ran it into the ground.
They did a little too much. Yes. It was the tag eventually to every scene. It's just a little too often. So we move to the hallway outside of the studio. Herb is leaning on the door frame at the end of the hallway. He's trying to collect himself. This is a cut to continuity. He's just left the programming office. He starts walking shakily down the hallway outside the studio when we hear Bailey calling after him.
Oh, Herb!
Hearing Bailey coming, Herb clears his throat, regains his composure, and puts his hands in his pants pockets as he continues walking down the hallway, only a bit straighter this time. Bailey comes running up to him.
Oh, hi, Bailey. How's it going?
Bailey tells him to stop that.
Well, how would you feel? I was saving that $100 to help take the little lady to Oklahoma City. Cowboy Hall of Fame is down there, and her brother used to be trail boss. Did I ever mention that? No, probably not.
Herb may be a lousy liar, but his recall of U.S. roadside attractions is amazing. The National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum really is right there on 63rd Street in Oklahoma City. It was opened in 1955 and continues today. It's home to more than 28,000 Western and American Indian artworks and artifacts. The facility also has the world's most extensive collection of American rodeo photographs, barbed wire, saddlery, and early rodeo trophies. Admission is $12.50 and they're open until 5 p.m. daily. If the Tarlicks are taking the Cordoba, they'd better leave some time for travel. This one is a 12-hour drive from Cincinnati.
Bailey tells him that she knows he found someone to buy the painting. Herb tells Bailey that it's not the money. He doesn't care about the money. Bailey asks who's buying the painting. Herb tells her Mr. Carlson.
He loves the darn thing.
I'm not buying it's not about the money. That's not registering with me at all.
Those words coming out of Herb's mouth, not believable.
So Herb is standing in front of an enormous Journey poster. It is a reprint of the Departure album cover, which Departure was Journey's most commercially successful album at that time. It was released in February of 1980, and they were touring very heavily on it right about this time. It would peak at number 8 on the U.S. album chart. The first single, Any Way You Want It, would hit number 23 on the U.S. Hot 100. Although it seems like Journey has always been a rock institution, this was a time before Escape. Their enormously successful Escape wouldn't be released until about 6 months later in July of 1981, and Journey would be ingrained in the collective consciousness forever after.
Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world.
Behind Bailey is a poster for the first album from Los Angeles power pop band, The Cretones. The album, Thin Red Line, was released in 1980. The band was led by singer-guitarist Mark Goldenberg, who also wrote most of their material. This album contained their only charted single, Real Love, which hit number 79 in June of 1980.
You need a real love.
After the Cretones broke up, Goldenberg would have success as a songwriter with Automatic for the Pointer Sisters. It was a top 10 hit in 1984. Goldenberg was also in touring bands for artists such as Peter Frampton and Chris Isaak. Since 1994, he has been the lead guitarist for Jackson Browne's band.
So Bailey asked Herb how much Art is paying for the painting.
Well, I don't know, about $160.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Were you in there when we talked about it? No, of course you weren't. 160.
Her best to make sure his lie is covered, so Bailey really wants this painting.
I'll give you $200.
Herb scratches his head, saying,
oh, gee, Bailey, I don't know.
Bailey tells Herb she will go to the bank at lunch. Herb says, all right.
If it means that much to you.
Now, didn't Bailey say she was too broke just last night to afford the painting? Now she's ready to pay double for what it went for at the auction? Bailey is beside herself. She's so happy to have gotten the painting.
I love this painting. Oh, Herb, thank you. Your mother would be proud of you.
Bailey happily rushes out of the door at the end of the hallway. Herb calls after her.
Yeah. She would.
Herb turns away from the door.
God, I have no values.
What a schleazebag.
A moment of self-reflection there in the hall. We cut into Art's office where Jennifer seems to be sewing on Art's suit jacket as he is telling her a joke, or at least he's trying to tell her a joke.
So the big tall guy says to the doctor, are you sure that's your elephant? And the doctor...
There's a knock on the door, and Jennifer says,
come in.
Herb comes in telling Art he has bad news.
I can't sell you that painting. Okay.
Yeah, Art was really, really broken up by that bad news, so he just continues telling Jennifer the joke.
The doctor takes a look over at the kangaroo, who's seated further down the bar.
No, I've heard this one. And he says, if that's your elephant, you buy him a drink.
Now, there is no bigger social faux pas than finishing someone else's joke. Even if you've heard it 100 times, you let whoever started it finish it. And I had no idea that Jennifer could sew.
One of her many talents that we've not seen yet.
Well, and I mentioned she's kind of like Barbie. You know, Barbie's a pilot, a veterinarian, a doctor, a
race
teacher.
Car driver.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of everything. Jennifer is Barbie the seamstress.
Mr. Carlson scowls and rolls himself back over behind his desk as Herb laughs loudly at the joke.
Funny, 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 big guy.
Jennifer asks Herb if he sold the painting to someone else. He tells her he did.
Should have kept it.
Herb asks why.
Because it was donated by the Van Giesen family, Jughead.
Jennifer leans forward, very impressed.
The Van Giesens, oh my.
Herb asks who the Van Giesens are. Jennifer's shocked he's never heard of this family. Jennifer explains they're a very rich old family and half the paintings in the county museum were donated by them. Herb sits back on the couch.
I knew that.
He begins to hyperventilate.
Again, the script writers are really relying on Frank to sell this hyperventilating thing.
And I'm worried Herb's going to have a grabber right there in the office.
He might pass out. Now we find ourselves in the bullpen, and Herb is on the phone speaking to someone. He keeps looking around, checking to see if anyone is coming in. We soon learn why he is keeping a lookout.
Would you please have Mrs. Van Giesen call me? Right. Herbert Ruggles, R-U-G-G-L-E-S, Tarleton III. No, the fourth. Okay? Yeah, it concerns a work of art, you know, like a painting. Right. Now you have my number. Right. No, thank you. And au revoir. That's French.
Herb hangs up the phone.
And we get a new detail about Mr. Tarlick. The R in Herbert R. Tarlick stands for Ruggles.
Yeah.
Must be a family name. Herb is adding to his pedigree. In Herb's Dad, we found out Herb was a junior, so he's Herb the Second. In Real Families, Bunny constantly referred to her brother as Herb the Third. It seems like in Herb's mind, the bigger the number, the more impressive the name. But we know from past episodes, Herbert Ruggles the Fourth hasn't been born yet.
He picks up the painting and, looking for a place to hide it, he decides to put it behind the couch. He is carefully stashing the painting behind the couch where it can't be seen when Bailey comes walking in.
Now, Herb ended that call with au revoir, and he's right, it is French. Literally translated, the phrase means until the re-seeing. Roughly translated to English for meaning, it means goodbye until we meet again. As is the way with American English, we stole it for our own. Au revoir is now also considered English with the same pronunciation and spelling as the French.
Bailey calls out Herb's name as Herb quickly turns and sits on the couch like nothing's been going on.
We gotta talk, Bailey.
Bailey holds out two $100 bills to Herb.
Here's my money.
Bailey asks Herb where her painting is. Herb tells her he had to take it back.
Oh, no, you don't. We made a deal.
Bailey puts the money down on Herb's desk. Herb picks it up and walks over to Bailey, who's sitting at her desk.
Herb puts the cash back on Bailey's desk as he talks.
Evidently, you don't know what the word deal means. You see, a deal is when papers are signed, receipts are given, legal obligations take place.
Bailey picks up her phone and she begins to dial.
I think I'll call the police.
What?
That's right.
And she knows the police phone number by
just
heart.
Off top of her head.
She just
has it. In the days before 911, she just has it memorized. Herb tells Bailey he doesn't care. Bailey says hello into the receiver. Okay, maybe Herb does care. He makes shushing noises, guides Bailey's hand back down onto the phone base so she hangs up.
Herb tells her, all right, the painting is hers, but he will buy it back from her for $300. Bailey stands and tells him no.
I like the painting. You don't. I want it. I want to admire it. I like it. It makes me feel good.
Herb offers her $400 for the painting. Bailey tells him that he doesn't understand. She tries to explain to him that not everything in the world is for sale. Not everything is commerce. Herb offers Bailey $500.
All right. Deal.
There you go.
Everything has its price. Herb then tells her $500 is too much.
$500 is a price and art appreciates.
Yeah, art appreciates. That's how she's justifying it in her mind. So Herb walks over to his desk.
All right, $500, I'll write you a check.
Bailey tells Herb she also wants the receipt from the auction because it's tax deductible. She tells Herb she'll write him another one. Herb looks up to Bailey.
You know, Bailey, deep down inside, you're just another shrewd businessman like myself.
Bailey tells Herb she is not, but she knows him and how he thinks, and everything is business and everything is a deal. Herb tells her, no, he doesn't.
Bailey tells him he does.
You got poor Les to give you $50, didn't you?
Yes, I did, thank you. I just stared at him through the DJ window till sweat rolled down the back of his neck. $50 just popped right out of his back pocket.
And it was this point when I was watching the episode, I was so confused with the money and the amounts, and I wasn't
cash,
sure who had what.
It's a combination of cash and checks.
Yeah.
And some people are paying him and some people are promising him money.
I was lost.
Yeah.
Bailey tells him that at home, he's just a real sweet guy with the kids. He tells her he is. Herb rips out the check from his checkbook and hands it to Bailey.
Okay. Your $200 and my check for $300.
Bailey takes the check from him, saying,
okay.
And a little bit of a production note here. Be watching Bailey's glasses during this scene. Normally, stage glasses don't have lenses in them. It's been mentioned several times that the Leonard character on Big Bang Theory wears glasses with no glass. Well, this is why. As Bailey moves her head, especially when she's sitting at her desk, we can see the huge banks of very bright studio lights reflected in the glass.
Les walks into the bullpen, and Herb jumps up to greet him.
Lester Baby!
Herb, I already gave you $50. Now leave me alone.
Herb tells Les he knows. He says Les was right all along, and he was wrong. Herb pulls $50 from his pocket and holds it out to Les.
Here's your 50 back.
Les refuses to take the $50, even though Herb insists. Herb asks Les why he won't take the $50.
Because it's not fair.
Les, fair is just a word people use. All right, average.
Bailey decides to get involved.
You shouldn't take the $50, Les. The painting's worth $500. Now Herb owes you half of that.
Herb closes his eyes and starts rubbing his temple.
What's a stroke feel like?
Bailey tells him, obviously, he's found another buyer.
Half the sale price must go to Les.
Herb goes over to Bailey's desk and he leans down, putting his face close to her.
No, I didn't find another buyer, really. I'm not lying this time. I mean, I'm not lying.
Not this time.
I mean, I'm not lying. I mean, he is so wrapped up in all these lies. He tells him he just wants the painting.
Herb looks at Les and tells him he will give him his $50 as well as write him a check for $100. Bailey tells Les not to do it.
Do it, Les. Trust me.
Trust me. Trust. After everything he's done to poor Les, Les scratches his neck as he thinks a bit. And finally, Les agrees. Herb scrambles over to his desk to write Les a check for $100.
I hate him, but he's my best friend.
Bailey tells Les Herb has found out that the painting is valuable, and this is another one of his little schemes. Les asks Herb if it's true. Herb says it's a scheme.
But when have you ever known any of my schemes to pan out, huh? I mean, when was it that I never wound up on the short end of a stick?
Man! He holds the check out to Les, who takes it and then asks for the $50 as well.
Herb has no faith in himself, even. Jennifer enters the bullpen asking Herb if he knows anything about a call for Ruggles the Fourth. Herb scrambles over to his desk for the phone. Herb picks up the phone and tells Mrs. Van Giesen he purchased the painting that she donated to the church auction.
Would you be so kind as to, you know, give me a brief history on that painting?
Herb listens, saying, uh-huh, a few times. He then thanks her and he hangs up. Herb is silent. He closes the checkbook and he starts straightening things on his desk. He sits for a moment and then more hyperventilating, but we don't know why.
Bailey asks him if he's okay. Herb holds out a hand to her in a hold-on-a-minute gesture. His difficult breathing calms, and he sits quietly for a bit before finally saying...
Her son did it. He paints a painting a day. Because he's in prison for selling Quaaludes.
And definitely the painting a day line gets an honorable mention for line of the episode. I love that one.
Bailey is smiling as Les says,
looks like the roosters have come home to roost.
Herb takes a calculator from his desk drawer.
100 for the painting. 100 to Les. 300 to Bailey. I'm out $500.
Bailey asks Herb if he sees what greed got him.
Now, Herb said the Van Giesen kid was in prison for selling Quaaludes. Quaaludes is one of the most popular brand names for the sedative hypnotic methaqualone. Methaqualone was first synthesized in 1951 in India. It was widely prescribed as a sedative and muscle relaxant in the 50s and 60s. By 1972, Quaaludes were the sixth best-selling sedative in the U.S. They were sold by pharmaceutical company William H. Rohr. The name comes from the combination of quiet and interlude, and they stuck the double A in the middle to mirror one of Rohr's most popular products, Maalox.
Quaaludes became popular as a recreational drug in the 60s and 70s, reaching a peak in the U.S. in the late 70s. They were often called by the nicknames Ludes or Disco Biscuits. Their widespread abuse was at an all-time high in the early 1980s. In the U.S., Ludes were withdrawn from the market in 1983, made a Schedule I drug in 1984, and manufacture was stopped completely in 1985.
Give me some Disco Biscuits. Bailey then walks over to Herb and tells him she wants to buy the painting. Herb looks hopeful.
For $500?
Bailey tells him no. She will keep her cash, but she's going to tear up his check.
You'll be getting the painting for free.
Really?
That's not fair.
This is where following this gets really convoluted.
Yes.
Bailey tells Herb he's lucky, then asks where the painting is. Herb tells her it's behind the couch. Bailey goes over to the couch to retrieve now her painting.
Les tells Herb that was a very nice thing for Bailey to do. She could have kept his check.
Yes, it was a very nice thing for Bailey to do.
Speaking of nice, I believe you have $150 of my money on your desk.
Oh, yes.
Les goes over to his desk and gets the money from under his Silver Sow Award. He walks over to Herb and holds it out as if he's going to give it to him. Herb starts to reach for it. When Herb reaches for it, Les pulls his hand back quickly.
I think you ought to learn a lesson from all this. So I'm going to give this to Jerry's kids.
Herb turns around, putting both of his hands on his desk. He looks ill.
His real kids.
Jerry Lewis did have real kids. He had a total of 7 kids. 6 of those were with his first wife, Patty Palmer. Lewis and Palmer were married for 36 years, from 1944 until 1980. In that time, they had, all right, get ready for it, Gary, Ronald, Anthony Joseph, Christopher Joseph, Scott Anthony, and Joseph Christopher.
Yes. Okay, so they used Anthony twice, they used Joseph 3 times.
Well, because his name is really Joseph Levitch, that's where the Joseph comes from. But I'm sorry, if I were Joseph Christopher and I knew I had a brother named Christopher Joseph, I'd be a little upset. They just swapped the names. So Lewis and his second wife, Sandy Pitnick, adopted daughter Danielle in 1992. Now, when Lewis died, he intentionally excluded his biological children, their spouses, and offspring from receiving a dime of his $50 million estate. Instead, it all went to Sandy, who was a former Vegas showgirl, and in the event of her death, to their adopted daughter, Danielle.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Mr. Carlson comes into the bullpen, puts an envelope on Bailey's desk, and then looks at Les.
Where were you on Sunday?
Yeah, where were you?
I was in Dayton visiting my mother, Mr. Carlson, something I'm sure that you can appreciate. But I wanted you to know that my thoughts were with you in your very fine auction.
Mr. Carlson tells Les he is very kind. Pulling the check from his pocket, Les tells Mr. Carlson,
I would like to endorse this check in the amount of $100 as my small way of letting you know I care.
Les wasn't even there, and he's getting all kinds of kudos. Art is thrilled. He thanks Les. Les tells them goodbye, and he heads out for the day. Art looks at Herb.
Now, is that some kind of a guy or what? Huh?
He wasn't even there. Art leaves the bullpen, turning to give Herb a stern look just before he goes through the doors. Herb turns and, hyperventilating, puts his head down on his desk. Bailey's sitting on the couch looking at her painting. She turns to Herb.
You should see somebody about that.
Finally, somebody worried about Herb and his hyperventilating issue.
And, you know, Herb said his schemes...
And when did they work out? He predicted it.
Right, he predicted, and here we go again, another scheme that backfired.
That did not work, and he's out a ton of money. Didn't even get the kudos from Carlson he was looking for. Now, I was looking at shoot order on this one versus the others, and it looks like they took a little bit of a break. This is another small story, happened all in the regular sets, much like Baby It's Cold Inside. And this happened right around Bah Humbug, Then they took Baby It's Cold Inside and this one, and then they go into Daydreams, which is a huge, huge production value kind of show coming up next week. So it seems like, you know, they're trying to bounce back and forth, give the set builders a little bit of a break and the folks that have to do all the planning for that kind of thing and do some of these smaller stories. Now, this one being hung up on the one prop, the painting, and then playing with all the dollars, it just wasn't as much fun to follow as the drunkenness of Baby It's Cold Inside.
I lost interest in when it was getting too many
figures,
yeah,
too complicated. Yeah. It's Roy Penny referred to it in his blog post about this episode. He said, this is a writerly episode. And I can see that. It is constructed to be a story that is all tied together and it ties out at the end. But I think keeping it that detailed, it kind of loses the viewer's interest. You kind of fade away.
Lost mine.
Yeah. So that is going to do it for The Painting. What is up for next week, Donna?
Well, as you mentioned, we will be discussing Daydreams. Mr. Carlson is to give a speech at a broadcaster's dinner. He rehearses his speech at work in front of the staff. It is so boring that everyone begins daydreaming. Each of them daydreams about what they would rather be doing than working at the station.
That's going to do it for this episode of the WKRP cast. If you want to watch along with us, make sure to check our show notes. Find us on social media. You can follow our Facebook page. All you have to do is search at WKRPcast. And for more WKRP fun, become a patron. Go to patreon.com/WKRPcast for behind-the-scenes fun, full interviews, and more.
Got a question, comment, or correction? Let us know about it. Write us, WKRPcast@gmail.com.
And remember to please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Bye, y'all.
May the good news be yours.
The WKRP cast is not endorsed by MTM Enterprises, Shout Factory, or CBS. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. WKRP in Cincinnati, the WKRP logo, and all names, pictures, and audio of WKRP in Cincinnati characters are registered trademarks of MTM, CBS, Shout Factory, or their respective copyright holders.
Almost forgot, fellow babies. Booger!